this flow through will get us through a bunch of drilling, and then the bulk sample cash flow should top us back up to keep going. And that should go right until we kickstart our DSO production model of hopefully Q3 of next year. And with that capital, we can keep drilling out this deposit and doing the right technical studies to put a quite a attractive looking package together of how many ounces, the mine plan, processing plan, and all that. So we would like to not dilute shareholders anymore, internally generate cash flow, which is extremely unique for a junior.
Yeah.
And that way, when our share price does appreciate, shareholders make more money. So.
Everybody, it's me, Steve Yang here, Natural Resource Stocks, and I am with Wesley Weimark. Wesley is the CEO of Inventus Mining. How are you, Wesley? Good, great to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. I'm doing pretty good. We're advancing the project a lot since we last talked.
Yeah, Wesley, I think we spoke last November. I can't believe it's already been, I don't know, 8 months or so, but congratulations, first of all, on your official CEO title. The last time you spoke, you and I spoke, we, as my understanding, you were basically everything but the title, but you know Pardo as well as anybody I know, and I think you wrote your undergrad thesis, if I recall. But what's it been like jumping into the CEO role? What's been the biggest adjustment, and how does your geotechnical background give you an edge as a leader?
It's been a bit different, but not too much. I'm trying to lead by knowing the fundamentals and the technical data and really going after results. So I think things really move when you got good results, and I'm focusing on the results. But yeah, not much, too much has changed. Just a lot more investor outreach and making sure, our investors are happy and trying to get the share price up and make everyone some money.
Love it. Wes, one thing that I look for as an investor is skin in the game. And I think you recently bought a meaningful amount of Inventus shares when you did become a CEO. If you can verify that, and what gave you the conviction to buy at that point?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I just believe in this project, and I think, it's got a lot of potential to be a mine, and that's what we're working on at the moment. But yeah, I've been purchasing shares. When we first sort of kicked this run off, I participated in the financing. I've been exercising my warrants and picking up shares on the open market when I see sort of a dwindling price. So I've got skin in the game.
Wesley, I think if I recall, I don't know if it's still 17 and 16%, but I believe Eric Sprott and Rob McEwen have a pretty big portion. Is that still the case? And if you can give investors a quick update on the share structure, who's been backing the company, whether you have major shareholders adding recently, and if you can talk about that a bit.
Yeah, there's still I think six, Rob McEwen's around 16, close to 17%, and Rob's between 15 and 16%. So their position hasn't changed. They believe in this project too, and we're just going through the motions to further develop it. We did do a financing in end of April, so we raised $2.5 million in just flow through.
Okay.
And that's going to be spent all in the ground and basically with drilling just to grow basically the mineral resource footprint that we're going to be putting into a resource in about Q4 of this year. So
Okay.
we got two drill rigs out there and we're busy drilling off a footprint.
So speaking of footprint, if you can give us an update on what's been going on, is it the Pardo River of Gold? Is that the full name? I know that a lot's happened since then. If you can bring us up to speed.
Yeah, we call it the Pardo River of Gold Project. So it's a paleoplacer conglomerate hosted gold system. And essentially, what it did is there was a gold source in a mountain range somewhere a long time ago, like 2 billion years ago. And it's been eroding out and depositing into an old riverbed. And, since then it got lithified and hardened and turned into hard rock, and that's what classifies it as a paleoplacer. And we're just at the cusp of sort of defining how much gold is in it. And like I said, resource in Q4, and that's not going to be the full gold system. That's just a small part of it. And the reason we're doing that is because we've been making money bulk sampling this stuff and hauling it 360 kilometers. So we see a very quick path to cash flow that could finance, provide the capital to drill off a bigger system and put a big resource together.
Wes, for those of us who aren't geologists, if you can give us a little bit, just a little bit on more on what a paleoplacer is that what drew you to the area? And then if you can tell us the significance of that and what you think you have.
So, yeah, you basically get gold depositing in a conglomerate layer, just like a sort of modern river. You see, I don't know, the show Gold Rush, you see them digging up conglomerate and putting it through a trommel and collecting the gold out of it. So, placers, those are called gold placers. So, those are pretty small, but paleoplacer, back 2 billion years ago or so. There was a lot more gold that came out of these things, and some world examples are like 10, 20, 30 million ounces of gold. And the biggest gold deposit in the world is the Witwatersrand, and that's a paleoplacer, and that's in South Africa. That's produced 35% of all the gold ever mined in the world. So these things can be huge, and we're just at the cusp of defining what we've got here in Ontario.
So, if you can give us an update on the bulk sampling, how's that going? What's been the biggest development there, and what's the timeline?
So I think the last time we spoke, we had extracted about 15,000 tons. So that's all been processed now in three campaigns. The first one, it cost us about 1.2 million, and we netted about 2.4 in gold revenue. So that provided the company with some cash flow. And then the second one, the 10,000 ton batch, we just put out a news release a week or two ago, and that one also provided some cash flow. And what's really important about them is it's starting to show the economics, and we do not have the best way of extracting this at the moment because we're doing it all through contractors. So there's a lot of cost cutting you could do if you did it at scale, and that's what we're seeing. So even though we're making money, we can increase the margins with a continuous operation. So that's what we're pushing to get. And that's why we're doing this, we're pulling the trigger on this resource early, so that we can get about a 500 or 600,000 ton production permit in place, and basically take this stuff at scale and haul it up to a third-party mill for processing. Another important thing that we've learned from the bulk samples is the modeled grade of how much gold we thought was in the rock is actually turning out to be very close to what we're getting at the mill. So they call that reconciliation, and basically it gives us confidence that when you drill this thing off, and you process it, you're going to be pretty close to what you estimate how much gold is in the ground. So that's another important thing that's going to help with our resource estimate.
So, in terms of what you've got, What are people still misunderstanding of how big this can get? I mean, what are we talking in terms of upside? You mentioned another place for a paleoplaster. Are all these big? I mean, how hopeful are you? What are the risks involved? And if you can talk about the upside a bit as well.
Well, that's something we're working on. Essentially, we're trying to de-risk this as much as possible. And the amount of gold that we see from this production area that we were trying to get permitted, like we see probably almost double our market cap in free cash flow from just that area. So that's we're trying to de-risk this as much as we can and not dilute shareholders as we develop it. So I don't know how big it's going to be at the end of the day. There's lots of the right geology outside of where we're drilling. It's just there is a bit of a nugget effect. We do need to put in tighter spaced holes. But fortunately, it's really shallow and it's flat, so doesn't cost too much to put a drill hole in. We're drilling this stuff down to about from right at surface to about 50 meters, and we could probably get hopefully 1 million to 2 million ounces defined in the next year and a half or so. So that's kind of what we're aiming for. And that it still could, like, there's still room to grow from that as well.
So I want to move over to the make sure I pronounce this correctly, Matanenda discovery.
Matanenda, yeah.
If you can tell me just the significance of that discovery, what that is a little bit, you know, does it simply add more ounces? Does it fundamentally change how investors should think about the
Oh,
scale and the economics of this thing?
it's really important. So essentially what we were looking at was one conglomerate layer, and that's what we were focused on because where we've done our most shallow drilling, that's what we typically see there. But what this has shown is basically there's three stacked layers within a 50 meter thick conglomerate or a sediment package. And we've been focusing on one that's about from 1 meter to about 5 meters thick, and we call that the main layer. And that's what we've been bulk sampling and most of our shallow drillings on. But what we've also noticed is there's another conglomerate lens underneath the main layer, and we knew it was there, but it always seemed to be low grade, like around 0.5 gram to 2 grams. But what we hit recently was high grade in it. So that changes how much gold could potentially be in that unit as well. And we don't have a good grasp of how big that system is. So we've got to do more drilling there. And then we've also noticed there's an upper unit that it runs pretty low grade, like 0.3 to 0.6 grams, but it's quite thick. And that's going to add more tonnage. And as we drill the deeper holes, we're starting to see that layer more. So essentially, there's three stacked layers. And yeah, it's just there's going to be a lot more tons and a lot more ounces to be found because of that exploration work that's identified those. And that upper unit, in today's gold price, it starts to make sense as well. And even though it is pretty low grade, if we do decide to do a strip mine at Pardo, it might not be economic by itself, but it would potentially maybe eliminate the cost to extract your waste to get to your main layer. So there's important economic implications for extracting that as well and getting the ounces out of it.
So you talked a bit about de-risking as well as, you know, improving the margins. You know, what's the next step with the improving the margins? What are you, is there something specifically that you're looking at to do in the near future? And then how close are you to delivering a maiden resource? And you know, why is that such an important milestone for you guys?
So, yes, we're drilling right now. We should have a cutoff date sometime in September. Resource hopefully out in end of October. And that's going to start illustrating how many ounces are in this. Like the primary focus is this production area of almost 600,000 tons. So we want to determine how many ounces and tons are there. And then we can do an economic study on that. And there's a few other things to improve margins. It'll be planning for a continuous operation. So there's mobilizing equipment up and demobilizing it every time we do a bulk sample. And that's quite expensive because there's quite a few moving pieces with that, like crushers and all the blasting equipment and heavy equipment. So if we can eliminate that, and have a bigger contract with certain groups, we can do things at scale and improve the margins there. And another thing we're working on is ore sorting. So if we can reduce the amount of material that we actually send to the mill, but it's at a higher grade, the trucking and milling costs are quite substantial. So if we can ship a higher grade product, the margins will improve there. And then one other thing that we're looking at in the sort of long term is this stuff heap leachable? So if we do create a high grade ore sorted product, the waste product will still have a bit of gold in it. So can we get that as well? And that's something we would look to implement in a bigger mine scenario once we've got a bigger resource and a proper mine plan and processing plan. But that's something else we're looking at as well.
So, if you can talk a little bit about the infrastructure that's there and how far is the mill?
So the mill we're going to now is McEwen Inc's stock mill, and it's about 360 kilometers away. We can truck year round. There isn't really anything out there, and we don't need any infrastructure to kickstart this. We call it DSO, so direct ship ore production. So our DSO model, we don't really need maybe a little bit of improvement on the roads because when you're sending 40-ton trucks, it tends to beat up the road quite a bit. So a little bit of road improvement, but not much. So you don't need, there's no real initial capital to get started. And that's pretty unique in this industry. Like there is some other exploration groups doing bulk sampling, and they forecast cash flow from it, but they have to put up quite a bit of capital to get a ramp in because most deposits are vertical. So the access that you got to put a ramp in, and those are very expensive. So we don't need that. Ours is all surface mining, strip mining, not even an open pit. So it's another advantage of strip mining is you can reclaim what you've already extracted, like a previous area. You can put your waste back, put the soil back on, and revegetate so it looks like you were never really there, and there's not much of a footprint.
How much access do you have to water?
Well, we're in Ontario, so there's lakes all over the place.
Okay,
So
so that's
there's
not an
access
issue.
for it.
And
No, where we're planning to do this part DSO production, it's elevated, so there shouldn't be any groundwater in there. So we don't really have to deal with water. And that's another reason we can get permitted more quickly is because it's a very simple process. And but there is small ponds and swamps around, so there's access to water if we do need it.
And who else is there? I mean, you mentioned the roads could be better. Is this a completely isolated place? And then if you can also speak a little bit more about Ontario as a jurisdiction and the permitting timelines.
So we're about an hour and 40-minute drive out of Sudbury, and Sudbury is about, well, it's got about 120 years of mining. It's a huge mining camp, probably over $1 trillion in metal value that's come out of there. So we have access to like consultants and expertise in mining and equipment and all that stuff, which is, well, an hour and 40-minute drive. And where we're located, it's not that isolated. There's like, it's a main artery for logging, and there's some camps in the area, so it's pretty good road access. They call it Highway 805. So it's a gravel road, but it's a pretty solid and well-maintained road. So access isn't an issue. And yeah, and we're in Ontario, which has a very favorable mining environment at the moment. So the government's really trying to push the start of mines and help mining companies out and get into production. So we're in a good political climate to kick something like this off.
Wesley, I want to go back to the finances. You talked about not wanting to dilute shareholders, and you did have a recent raise, if I recall. How much money do you have in the bank, and how long does that take you, and how does that maybe correspond with these projects that you're trying to accomplish?
So we've been generating cash flow from bulk sampling, but it wasn't happening quick enough to get a good drill footprint in before our resource, and that's why we raised a bit of money, and it was all flow through with no warrant. So that was just to get a bunch of drilling in before the resource comes out.
Okay.
And we've got a path forward. We still have 30,000 tons of bulk sample material to extract. So we've only taken about a third of what we're able to. So that should get processed in the Q3, Q4 of this year.
Okay.
We've actually already incurred all the cost to take out 10,000 of that already. It's stockpiled, ready to go. So, I don't see a raise in the future. This flow through will get us through a bunch of drilling, and then the bulk sample cash flow should top us back up to keep going. And that should go right until we kickstart our DSO production model of hopefully Q3 of next year. And with that capital, we can keep drilling out this deposit and doing the right technical studies to put a quite a attractive looking package together of how many ounces, the mine plan, processing plan, and all that. So we would like to not dilute shareholders anymore, internally generate cash flow, which is extremely unique for a junior,
Yeah.
and that way when our share price does appreciate, shareholders make more money. So
And how many shares do you guys have right now?
I think we got 221 million out.
And in terms of your, share price getting higher, why aren't you guys higher? Like, and what's the path forward? Are you guys also looking at institutions? From your view, what are people misunderstanding?
I think it's because we're unique and not proven on the success of this just yet. So we're like on the precipice of sort of showing people. We don't have a resource yet, so it's hard for a lot of investors to quantify how many ounces we have in the ground. But we're doing a lot of work to sort of show that when we do come out with a resource, people will be able to do back of the napkin calculations based on how much it cost us to do bulk sampling, how much value is in the ground, and then also the rest of the project. Like that'll just be where our production area is focused. And you'll be able to compute value from that.
Yeah.
And that doesn't add the value of drilling off even more and creating a big resource. So I think the puzzle pieces will come together as we keep moving this forward and executing our plan. I think the market will start to pay attention. A lot of it is we're a unique, the geology is unique. People aren't used to a flat-lying conglomerate gold deposit. Paleoplacers are rare in the world, but the ones that do exist are quite large. But it's not a typical story that investors hear about. So it's kind of easier for them to compute value on a vertical deposit that is lots of juniors have those, right? And they you can see the success stories of those, and it helps
Yeah.
you evaluate, okay, this group just drilled this really thick high-grade intercept, and then the market loves it and jumps on board thinking there's a lot more of it. And whereas ours is shallow and flat, but it's not that thick. So we're continuously getting good results in this thinner layer. But I think people aren't understanding, there's a lot of capital that goes into getting a mine going, and a lot of permitting requirements. And we're kind of sidestepping that because ours is so easy to extract, and being shallow and flat is a huge advantage. So just trying to get out there and tell that story over and over again, and hopefully
So
people listen and catch on.
people are not pricing in. So people are not pricing in or catching on to the advantages of a flat, or the advantages of or the potential of a paleoplasty plaster is what I'm is gathering as part of the market cap miscalculation, if you will. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
That's part of it for sure, but maybe a big part.
Yeah. Who are your comps? I mean, in terms of you mentioned paleoplaster, you know, the ones that are big, they're big. But who are your comps? Do you compare yourself to some companies in the area, to the other projects that have paleoplasters? If you can tell us about what your market cap is as well, and where you think you
Well,
could potentially be.
it's hard to compare to other paleoplasters because they're owned by major miners and they have multiple assets. So it's hard to compute
Yeah.
value of them versus like if one of them just owned a paleoplacer. But for one, like Pan
Yeah.
American Silver owns the Jacobina paleoplacer in Brazil, and that's producing quite a bit of ounces, and it's probably got a reserve of over 6 to 8 million or something like that. Is grow it. They just keep growing it. And then there's Tarkwa in Ghana.
Yeah.
It's a big paleoplacer. I think the total camp's got about, it's produced maybe 30 or 35 million ounces. And they're producing 500,000 ounces a year out of that camp. So it's hard to compare to them. That shows kind of the scale of how big these things can be.
Yeah.
And when it comes to companies doing something similar, no one's doing it similar on the same geology, but sort of some of the same development path would be someone trying to do a bulk sample. So there's a few of those groups, but I think I mentioned this earlier. They require capital to get the underground infrastructure to access their bulk samples. So we're a bit different in that sense. And maybe that's part of the problem. We don't really have a comparable to look at when it comes to us. We're kind of unique.
Being unique and without a resource yet, if you can, where are you guys on the Lassonde curve? If you can tell us your path to production and just kind of what milestones that our listeners can follow that they should look forward to.
Well, it's funny talking about the Lassonde curve. It's something I've just been thinking about lately. There's the discovery phase, and then you get that dip from feasibility into construction. And what I think we can do is kind of skip that downtrend where you need feasibility and construction, because we don't really need construction to kickstart our direct ship ore production. We can kind of skip that dip and just continue to rise. That's something we're looking at, because we can generate cash flow from this DSO production model,
Yeah.
and there's no downtime where you're doing all the right studies and building out or waiting for permitting and building out a processing facility on site. So it's kind of interesting. Maybe I'll have to regenerate a Lassonde, special Lassonde curve for us. I
A
don't know.
Wesley curve.
Pardo curve.
Wes, if you can, do you have any milestone timeline, path of production stuff that we can look forward to? How do we best follow your story?
So we'll be putting out a lot of drilling results. You can't really look at them as like typical people look at grade thickness. You need to look at continuous hits of the same thing. So it's 2 to 3 meters of 2 to 5 grams. So those are like good intersections for us, and we just keep getting those over and over again because it's a flat lying unit that we drill through perpendicular. So that. Look for those drill results. Look for kickstarting our bulk sampling program, the processing side of it, and extracting the remaining 20,000 tons. And then we'll have the resource out in hopefully the end of October. And that'll start to help people evaluate the economics of this thing. You can basically look at what it cost us to do bulk sampling. And then think about, okay, the cost will be cheaper because they're doing it at scale, and you'll have an idea of how many ounces we have in the ground, so you can start to compute value that way. And then it's getting our production permit in place, and just continuously growing the footprint of this thing, and you can start seeing, okay, if they drilled this area and it had this many ounces and they're having success out here, you can start figuring out the resource growth that we're undertaking. So those are kind of the main catalysts that are coming forward. And another thing is ore sorting test work. Is this stuff amenable to heat bleaching? If it
Yeah.
is, it's a very low cost processing method that we might be able to use in conjunction with ore sorting. So that'll improve margins for the operation, which we haven't really demonstrated yet. And yeah, those are the main things I would be focusing on.
Well, Wes, it's not every day you get to talk to a junior miner who's cash flowing. So it's certainly an intriguing story. Like you said, there's a lot of stuff that people don't know about, and I appreciate you just a second call here. But looking forward to following your story myself. For the listeners, I am not currently in an investor in Inventus, although that may change. Wesley and Inventus are not sponsors. This interview is not being paid for. Please do your due diligence. I'm not giving investment advice, but one of the ways you can do your due diligence is to follow the ticker, follow the website, reach out to Wesley with questions. Wesley, if you'd be so kind as to give your ticker, your website, where you're trading one more time.
So we're on the TSX Venture under IVS, and you can find us at InventusMining.com. And we have social media. You can find us on X or LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube. So we've got a lot of content out there.
All right, Wes. Well, it's good to see you again. Look forward to following your story, my friend.
All right, thanks,
Thanks for
Steve.
being here.